This is Mae Brussel. It's the second half of World Watchers, program number 798. In case you picked up in the middle of the first half and missed the introduction, this is a one-hour analysis of the current news. Now, there's something very scary taking place. I want to share with you, I might have mentioned it before, and I may bring it up every week, and if I do, it's intentional, not that I'm repetitious. But there are many long articles out now about the Contrigators and their links to the past, going from Southeast Asia, then to Cuba and into the Miami area to assist each other in trying to overthrow Fidel Castro with the Bay of Pigs operation. Then they show up again in Southeast Asia and in Laos and with the Phoenix program. And then they're involved with the Nguyen Han Bank, and then they're in California at Stanford Technology or in Washington or on different assignments, and are caught in the Iran-Contragate scandal at the present time, funding the Contras and planning a coup in Iran. And many of them served in Iran under the Shah. But in these chronologies that are being made, the relationship of some of these people to the murder of John Kennedy is being kept out. Now, in my Watergate article in Realist in 1972, I was the first person to publish the connections of the Watergate people and Nixon's team to the murder of John Kennedy. And then other researchers got on the bandwagon and began to make those connections. But the relationship of these people goes back further. And in my article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?, it went back to the Galen operation and Alan Dulles and bringing the German teams into the United States to help us with the assassination-political programs to choose heads of state. Now, the articles about Contrigate are doing the same things, and very excellent researchers such as Peter Dale Scott helped with the San Francisco Examiner article, where there is a detailed section on the activities of these various agents. But left out of this is any hint or suggestion of political assassination in Dallas, even though the documents of Oliver North show planned coup in Iran, planned taking over Nicaragua, invade Nicaragua. They succeeded in killing Maurice Bishop and dropping bombs on a mental hospital, having a coup in Grenada. And their whole past is linked to death squads and assassinations. Not, I say their past up to the day that the heads of the team right now, the heads, Mr. Admiral Poindexter and Oliver North, were forced to resign and leave the National Security Council. I'm not saying that the agencies behind them aren't continuing the same operations to invade Angola and take over Afghanistan and continue, maybe invade Nicaragua at the height of the Contrigate hearings. Ronald Reagan could cook up something like that. But these activities haven't stopped, but those people doing them right now have been temporarily halted, and other people will take on the jobs, only they'll get permission, so it won't be illegal. Now, going back to these people, to the early Asian activities and their links to the Kennedy assassination is very important, and I just want to share a few dates for you because they're endless, but just a few of them. In the 1950s, General John Singlaub from Western Goals and from the World Anti-Communist League and from his own front organizations, he raises the money for the weapons and material for these, what he calls, freedom fighters. John Singlaub and Thomas Kleins and E. Howard Hunt worked closely in the CIA, in the OSS, going back earlier, but in the 1950s, they were in Asia. They worked with Mitchell Werbel, the daddy of the silencers, the assassination coup weapon, or the murder weapon. They all worked together in Asia. They worked for the Central Intelligence Agency from 1958 to 1962, and everything I'm going to share on this time precedes the murder of Kennedy. Thomas Kleins was station chief in Taiwan. Klein helped found the Taiwan Political Warfare Cadres Academy, and as soon after that, he set this network up until the year before Kennedy was killed. But as the few years fly by, and when Michael Deaver sets up a public relations firm to help get Ronald Reagan elected president, and he begins his operations in 1980 after meeting with Mr. Salvatore and the people that had been grooming Reagan, one of the areas that Deaver covers is Taiwan. He becomes the agent representing Taiwan. John Singlaub was deputy station chief in South Korea in 1950-52, and right after that is when Reverend Moon just appeared out of nowhere thanks to Ryosha Sasakawa. And Michael Deaver, shortly after that, is the public relations man for South Korea. And Ronald Reagan refers to Michael Deaver as like a son. He's his best friend. If Ronald could adopt two children, it would be Oliver North and Michael Deaver. So Deaver has been close to helping the president get elected and handling these countries, and the brilliant work of Peter Dale Scott in writing the connections of Michael Deaver to these agencies, to the Vatican, to the P2, is something that I'm going to share with you. He gave it to me and other researchers, so I assume it's to be shared, and he's writing a book on the Contragate. But I just want to take a knife and cut a cleavage into the book and insert those people linked to Kennedy. Now, Singh Laub, as I say, has been very active with Ronald Reagan's wishes to get the Contras back in power and the Somoza team back in power in Nicaragua. And he's also closely affiliated with Mr. Channel, who runs the offices that get candidates defeated or elected based upon their approval or disapproval of Star Wars and the Contras. And Singh Laub was on the board of Western Gold, still is, and Channel took that over when Larry McDonald was down. E. Howard Hunt was a psychological warfare operator against the mainland of China. He was based in Tokyo. And a very important person, Colston Westbrook, was trained in Tokyo in mind control and so forth. And he was one of the operators for Ronald Reagan and Edwin Meese with the SLA story, the SLA saga of kidnapping Patty Hearst and testing the SWAT teams and trying to create a terrorism in the United States. That manufactured Defense Department operation came out of Korea and came out of Tokyo. And E. Howard Hunt was psychological warfare operator in Tokyo. In 1954... the APACL was founded in Taiwan, again, where Deaver's going to be so influential, and where the China lobby had its strength when it was promoting Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan as candidates for high offices. The APACL was founded in Taiwan, and its Latin American counterpart, the CAL, was founded in Mexico City by E. Howard Hunt. Now, E. Howard Hunt's children are, William Buckley is the godfather of E. Howard Hunt's children. Hunt, of course, was caught in the Watergate story with Frank Fiorino, Frank Sturgis, and I've detailed on other programs his relationship, Frank Sturgis, to Lee Harvey Oswald and the Kennedy assassination. I don't want to get too far on that now, and I can go back and review it for you later. Hunt was part of the CIA operation in Guatemala in 1954, as were many of these contragators, where R. Benz, the president, was overthrown, a democratically elected president. And his assistant, David Phillips, helped him, and they employed a Lionel Cisnigo Artero. He worked with clandestine radio stations, and his mentor was the future godfather of Guatemala, a man named Mario Sandoval Alarcon, who attended Ronald Reagan's inauguration with Licio Gelli and has been a kingpin between the World Anti-Communist League, the Vatican, and funding the Contras and the death squad connections between South America and Central America. In 1958, former U.S. intelligence officers started funding the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, the APACL, and in 1958, there were preparatory meetings for the World Anti-Communist League, and the U.S. intelligence were there in Taiwan, including Thomas Kleins, and he had been stationed there and had access to all of this. By 1958, in Mexico City, they had the first World Anti-Communist League meeting, and this organization has been close to the hearts of people like Alexander Haig and Jesse Helms. And if you read the book Inside the League on the World Anti-Communist League, you get a good idea of the cast of characters involved in the League. Now, in 1960, when Young Americans for Freedom was formed, and it's so important to keep reiterating this point, William Buckley formed it with Douglas Caddy. Caddy ran the offices of Mullen Associates in Washington, which were identical to the Channel offices that were helping Ronald Reagan and the Republicans get elected in 1986 and also in 84. And the offices of Mullen Associates, with Douglas Caddy running it, also had links to Riley Coffee Company. They carried the account of Riley, where Lee Harvey Oswald worked in New Orleans. But Douglas Caddy was a roommate of Bohai Park in college, and Bohai Park gave allegedly $1 million to help the Bolivian coup in 1980 by Klaus Barbie, and worked close with Klaus Barbie and with the cocaine dictator that came into power then. And it was just 1 year before that the CIA had documents that Joseph Mengele was in a cocaine operation out of Brazil with Klaus Barbie in Bolivia, and the profits from the Brazilian cocaine and the connections to Tomasa Buceta make that strange route up to Manhattan to the establishments of Donald Reagan, Merrill Lynch, and E.F. Hutton, run by George Bush's brother-in-law, Scott Pierce. They're large institutions, but these men are so visible in the Ronald Reagan administration, and drugs and assassination coups and death squads are a fabric of a team that have worked for a long, long time. Now, in September of 1960, Robert Mayhew was working with the CIA, and that's when they made the arrangements to set up these death squads, which were for the overt purpose were to kill Fidel Castro, but which I don't believe had as much to do with Castro as they had to do with murdering John Kennedy and affecting coups all over the world. Castro is still there, but the operations that Mayhew was used for, while he worked for the Howard Hughes, for Howard Hughes specifically, involved Edward Lansdale, who died just 2 weeks ago, and Santo Trafficante, who just died this week. And these characters worked in and out with these operation chiefs from the OSS, the FBI, the CIA, and so forth. In 1964, as soon as John Kennedy was murdered, E. Howard Hunt was working with the CIA and General John Singh Laub and other persons stationed in Asia, Mexico, and Guatemala, and they created the Council for the Defense of the Continent. They have unending amount of institutions, and the CIADC, the Council for the Defense of the Continent, was involved with the Brazil coup in 1964, a year after Kennedy was killed, and that was directly in the hands of Vernon Walters, Ronald Reagan's ambassador to the UN now, and to Frank Carlucci, who was with the Defense Department and the CIA, who's now the National Security Advisor under Ronald Reagan. And because of the death of Trafficante and Edward Lansdale, both of them dying a week apart, and working with these teams and the contractors so much in the news, it's good to refresh these dates because they go quickly, and I don't know if you can remember all of these. In July 1966, Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins, long active from Taiwan and South Korea, are sent to Laos. And by 1968, John Kennedy's brother, Robert Kennedy, was dead. Martin Luther King was dead. And at that point, Santos Trafficante, who was involved in the assassination plot to kill John Kennedy, appears with his partners from the Miami group and the group from Florida, the mob group that went in from Asia to Florida for the setting up the teams that allegedly were to kill Castro. But it was Kennedy that was killed, not Castro. They went back to Asia, and Santos Trafficante, who died this last week, was a key figure in gangster operations in Hong Kong and Saigon, and references to him are in Politics of Heroin of Southeast Asia, so that the drug money started flowing in very nicely as soon as the two Kennedys were dead, Martin Luther King was dead, and of course King was objecting to that war in Vietnam. Now, Jimmy Breslin wrote an article not after Trafficante was dead, but just before. Santos Trafficante died March the 17th, this past week. And in December of 86, Jimmy Breslin was writing an article for the New York papers, from the New York Daily News, and this is what he was saying. He said he was preparing to go to Washington for the hearings, for the Contragate hearings, but before going to Washington, he thought he'd read a book about Edwin Wilson, that name came to mind, and that he would study the CIA involvement in drug running and gun running, Wilson specifically the gun running. And so he read Peter Moss's book, Manhunt, about Edwin Wilson. And he said, Mr. Breslin went on to say, that you watch for certain names in armed scandals, and now with General Secord and Thomas Kleins in the news, he went back to Edwin Wilson. He said, General Secord, Richard Secord, was apparently a thief for years. Remember, Secord was rescued by Michael Ledeen from prosecutions, along with Frank Carlucci. He said Thomas Kleins and Secord have secret Swiss bank accounts. As chief of station in Miami, Kleins was chief of station. He worked closely with Theodore Shackley of the CIA, and Kleins and Shackley worked with Rafael Quintero. And in 1986-87, they were building airfields in Costa Rica to effect a coup in Nicaragua. Of course, Shackley and Kleins are interesting as defendants in the Christic Institute, along with Quintera, that lawsuit I've mentioned on the air many times, that accuses these people of gun running, narcotics traffic, and assassination plots. Klein, Shackley, Wilson, Quintera all worked in the Bay of Pigs with Sam Giancana, John Rosselli, and Sam Trafficanda, who died last week. So he was mentioning the connection of Trafficanda to these people and the obituaries of Trafficanda. There were many of them. I'm sure you saw them. One that I have from the Tampa, Florida paper says that Trafficanda was called the boss of the La Cosa Nostra. In July last year, a federal judge dismissed a racketeering conspiracy charge against him. He declared a mistrial. There was a pending charge from a 1981 Miami indictment in a kickback scheme to build millions of dollars of health and welfare funds set up for Laborers International Union of North America. Trafficanda, when he died, was suffering a memory loss. He had had heart surgery. The San Francisco Chronicle obituary on Trafficanda said he was rated number 15 last October in a Fortune magazine list of the 50 most powerful organized crime figures in the United States. Most of his income came from gambling, loan sharking, and narcotics activities. He was arrested in the past for bribery, lottery, investigations for homicide, but nothing was proven. He spent about 1 hour in jail. In September 1978, Trafficanda told the House committee that he participated in CIA assassination plots against Castro. I was helping the United States government, he said, as a witness before the House investigating John Kennedy's assassination, but he refused to answer questions. The defense of Oliver North and John Poindexter is that they were defending their country. What they did was in the interest of their country. Trying to get a coup in Nicaragua and a coup in Iran, or a coup in Dallas, the coups keep going on and the deaths keep piling up, and it is the same people. But the Chronicle continues one more sentence in their obit. In July 1979, the House panel concluded in its final report that Trafficanda and the reputed mafia in New Orleans, Carlos Marcello, were the most likely family bosses of organized crime to have played a role in the Kennedy assassinations. And Trafficanda's assassination role was very closely tied into the hit teams that Sam Giancana and John Rosselli had. Now, in 1975, Senator Church's committee in Congress investigated the plots to kill foreign leaders. The title was called The Alleged Assassination Plots Involving Foreign Leaders, and I have a copy of the report. Many of you have it. Interestingly enough, the chairman of that report was Frank Church, who's now dead. Another member of the committee on the report, Philip Hart, is now dead from Michigan. He was always referred to as the conscience of the Senate. The vice chairman of this investigation of mingling of assassinations, gun running, and narcotics traffic at the time was John Tower, who is currently protecting the National Security Council. Interestingly enough, Ronald Reagan offered John Tower the office of CIA director while he was investigating the President of the United States and the White House operations that are, many of them are illegal and will be prosecuted. There was a big scandal at the time of Watergate when Richard Nixon was offering Judge Burns a position as FBI director. J. Edgar Hoover had been killed in May of 72. L. Patrick Gray was the acting director when the story came down. And because he offered a judge a position as director of the FBI while he was investigating the burglary at Daniel Ellsberg's offices that involved John Ehrlichman and E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, that was a terrible scandal that Nixon should offer a promotion for somebody investigating him. And now we have Ronald Reagan offering first Tower and then Scowcroft the position of CIA director while they're investigating the White House and the president and the National Security Council members, and it's not a scandal at all. We're so numbed we can't even keep track of what is happening. Also on that panel investigating assassination was Gary Hart, who wants to run for president, Walter Mondale, who was vice president under Jimmy Carter, Howard Baker, who's now chief of staff for the White House, acting as the prime minister and taking care of our policies for the president. Retired is Barry Goldwater and also Charles Mathias. Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania retired. And it's an interesting committee because these people had a lot of power. to get promotions or key positions. I guess if you know where the bodies are buried, you get the power. Now, because Edward Lansdale and Santos Traficano just died about 10 days apart, as the news flies, I just want to share with you a little bit from those hearings of Senator Frank Church and John Tower about the Bay of Pigs that involved these operations, but involved Robert Mayhew and John Roselli later in things that became very big that, in fact, tangled with Merrill Lynch and Donald Reagan. And I just want to introduce some of you who don't have these hearings to the way the questioning went. The initial plan, according to the people who testified, was in August of 1960. And I believe that by that time, and a meeting took place in November of 1960 in Beverly Hills, that this team was set up for the purpose of killing the president. And when Richard Nixon was in, he lost to John Kennedy. When he was in later, they were really home running. The narcotics was escalating. The coups were happening. The World Anti-Communist League was active. The death squads were rampant all over the place. And the home free attitude could take place as soon as they got rid of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. Now, Colonel Sheffield Edwards was the director of Office of Security. He went to Robert Mayhew, and these are the Senate hearings. I'm not making this up. He went to rely on Robert Mayhew to pursue and recruit someone tough enough to handle the job of killing Castro. Mayhew was an old ex-FBI agent who had entered into career as a private investigator in 1954. That's when he started. A former FBI associate of Mayhew was employed in the CIA's Office of Security and arranged the CIA to use Mayhew for sensitive covert operations in which the agency didn't want to be caught. They couldn't use a person with a CIA employment tag or a government person caught. Now, the similarity here to Contragate is what I had on the air last week. When General John Secord left the Air Force, he simultaneously worked for the National Security Council and the Defense Intelligence Agency, and he worked for what appeared to be a private firm, Stanford Technology, in California, that actually was set up by Otto von Bolschwing and the Galen Network. So Mr. Secord can't be accused of being tampering with the government. He's not a payroll person. He's not on the payroll, but this is the way they do. They give them a front organization like Stanford Technology to take care of the operation. So Mayhew was the proper person to do this work because no agency would suffer if they were caught. The Senate hearings say during 1954 to 55, Mayhew cooperated with the CIA in attempting to undermine a contract with the Saudi Arabian government, and it tells how he tapped somebody, and this was Aristotle Onassis. He was going against getting a monopoly of oil for Saudi Arabia and playing around with governments even 1955 and 54, and he even made films in Hollywood supposedly purporting to depict a foreign leader, somebody who looked like him, to show him having sex with another party, and he was involved in blackmail, sexual blackmail, and overthrowing countries or oil prices, even in those days. Mayhew was paid a retainer fee at first, but that was stopped because his detective agency had enough money for him. The operational support chief served as Mayhew's case officer for the CIA agency, and they proposed an operation. They said, as Mayhew recalls the conversation, the support chief of the CIA asked him to contact John Roselli, an underworld figure with possible gambling contracts and contacts in Las Vegas, to determine if he would participate in a plan to dispose of Castro. They testified that this was a suggestion made because Roselli had known Mayhew for a long time, since the 1950s, and although Mayhew's claim not to have been aware of the undercover role of Roselli, it was certain evident to me, Mayhew testified himself, that he was able, Roselli, to accomplish things in Las Vegas when nobody else seemed to get the same kind of attention. So he knew a man who could allegedly kill Fidel Castro because he could accomplish things in Vegas, and you wonder how many people died. The support chief of the CIA previously met Roselli at Mayhew's home. They each claimed that the other one had raised the idea of using Roselli, but that doesn't matter one way or the other. They were going to use the cover of the Howard Hughes organization. Again, he was working for Howard Hughes, so it wouldn't take the association to the CIA or the federal government. Mayhew was reluctant to become involved in the operation because it might interfere With his relationship with his new client, Howard Hughes, who I may mention he never met, he finally agreed to participate because he felt he owed the agency a commitment. And while he was working for Hughes, he was working for the agency, and all he had to say to the Hughes people was, "We're planning to overthrow Cuba, and that was all right. You could have time off." Hughes wanted him to come to California when he was in Miami, and he said, "No, you can take care of Fidel Castro. That's okay." The hearings go on to say that when Mayhew went to Florida, of course, he recruited Rosselli and Santos Trafficante. And I bring his name up because after that, Trafficante is in Asia with these people. Back in Miami, he's never touched by the law, and he's known for his roles in assassinations, suspected murders, gun running, narcotics traffic, and he's some kind of a holy cow. So Sam Giancana and Santos Trafficante meet with John Rosselli, and they go about what are supposed to be endless ways, 20 different ways to kill Castro. Castro is still alive. Mayhew is old and alive. I can't remember. Did Mayhew die a year or so? I think he's alive. He might have passed away last year, now that I think about it. I'll have to check that out again. But there wasn't much about... Well, I better not bury him too soon. I sort of think that I'm somewhere half between. I can't even remember now if Mayhew is still around, not doing this kind of activity, I hope. But he was active with the FBI, the CIA, and he shared offices with Guy Bannister in Chicago in the FBI before Guy Bannister linked to the World Anti-Communist League. It was in New Orleans sharing offices back-to-back with Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, these people didn't achieve what they wanted with the invasion of the Bay of Pigs. They didn't get to kill Castro. They didn't get to take over the country. And Senator Church's account, the hearings, tell how meetings were held with John Kennedy and Attorney General Robert Kennedy to set up other operations not to kill Castro. And according to these accounts, they, of course, you know, John Kennedy removed Alan Dulles from the Central Intelligence Agency. And the hearings say John Kennedy had a meeting in November 1961 with Ted Zulk, S-Z-U-L-C, who just finished a book about Fidel Castro. And he asked Richard Goodwin, a special assistant to Kennedy, to meet with Attorney General Robert Kennedy on November the 8th to discuss what they should do about Cuba. And Kennedy said, "I want to consider a system whereby," and these are the quotations, page 138, "of having conversations with Castro and with the United States, what they could do, either a hostile way or in establishing some kind of a dialogue with Fidel Castro." And he asked Mr. Zulk, "What do you think of assassinations? What did you think of their plan?" And he said, "I didn't like it." And John Kennedy responded, and Ted Zulk had the dates. June 10th, 1975 is when he testified. "I agree with you completely," Zulk said. The president said to him, "I agree with you completely." This is what he was testifying. President Kennedy went on for a few minutes to make the point how strongly he and his brother felt about the United States for moral reasons, that they should never be in a situation of having recourse to assassinations. Kennedy said he was testing Zulk by asking him about it. He said, "I'm glad you feel the same way. It's indeed morally wrong. We must not be part of the assassinations." Kennedy said he raised the questions because he was under terrific pressure from advisors. I think he said the intelligence people, I'm not positive, to okay the Castro murder, and he's resisting the pressures. Zulk made note of the conversation that he had with Kennedy. And Kennedy said, "I'm never going to do that as far as the assassinations go." And Mr. Goodwin, who was there, Richard Goodwin, who attended some of these meetings, said several days after the meeting, he referred to the discussion and of assassinations with Kennedy. And Kennedy said, "We can't get into that kind of thing or we'll all be targets." And at this point, Kennedy made that mistake of hiring Edward Lansdale for Operation Mongoose, which would be some way of affecting, changing the political system in Cuba, and not necessarily killing Fidel Castro. But Kennedy noticed that we would all be targets if we went after the assassination teams. And he also said, and it's in the Senate hearings, page 138 on the part to kill Fidel Castro, that he would resist the pressures that the intelligence community wanted him to okay murder, and he would resist it. Now, that's part of the history that's left out of a lot of the history books. They want to make Kennedy the person who headed up these death squads, and it isn't true. I'm going to continue next week with a lot more about the people currently that are in the news that they've been involved in killing, witnesses that have died suddenly or quickly, people heavily involved with these very agents who maybe are old age now. I grant that to Edward Lansdale and Santos Traficanta, but a part of history goes with them because it embroils what we're seeing today and ties together the pieces of the past. This is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week to continue along with some of these stories.